Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we use intersectional feminism, mindfulness, leadership, and strategy to support smart women to change the world without anxiety, insecurity, and burnout. On the show, we challenge the status quo and support you to unlearn harmful messages that keep you playing small so you can activate your superpowers and live with joy, confidence, and ease. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi. On the Well Woman Show this week, the recipient of the 2019 Maine Arts Fellowship for Literary Arts and the 2016 Breadloaf Rona Jaffe Foundation Scholarship in Nonfiction, Jennifer London. She writes at the intersection of health and the environment. Her essays have been published in Creative Nonfiction, River Teeth, Diagram, Long Reads, and other journals, selected for several anthologies and praised as notable in Best American Essays. A former therapist, she was named Maine's Social Worker of the Year in 2012. She and her husband, the artist Frank Turek, live in a little house in Portland, Maine, where they keep several chickens, two cats, one Great Dane puppy, and some gloriously untamed gardens. On the show, we discuss chronic illnesses affecting women, gender differences in healthcare and medical training that lead to delayed diagnosis and inadequate treatment of illnesses, and illness stigma, the importance of recognizing women's experiences and empowering personal narratives for societal change and well-being. We have a lot to cover on the show today, so I'm so excited you're here. And the Well Woman Show is thankful for support from Collective Action Strategies, a consulting firm that supports systemic change so that women and families thrive, and by the Well Woman Life Movement Challenge Quiz at wellwomanlife.com/quiz. As always, all the links and information are at wellwomanlife.com/330show. I'm speaking with Jennifer London, who goes by London, on the Well Woman Show today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Giovanna. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you and to talk to you about all the things. The first thing I wanted to really start with, though, is to have you tell listeners, who are you in the world today?
You know, I feel like foremost, I'm a writer. It's like what I've wanted to do since I was a kid. And now I've finally got a book out and I get to sort of live the life that I wanted as a writer. But I'm also a disabled woman who's passionate about social justice, which is part of the context of the book that I wrote. And I'm an LCSW, a licensed clinical social worker. And although I'm not seeing clients anymore, I do offer clinical supervision to other therapists, which I love. And I'm an animal lover.
Aw. Okay. London, tell me what are you working on right now and how does it impact women's lives and well-being?
So my book, American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life, just came out in May. It took me 20 years to research and write, so I'm really excited to have it out in the world now. The book is about my experience of coming down with a case of mononucleosis that turned into chronic fatigue syndrome in 1989, which is now called myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, and co-occurring multiple chemical sensitivity. What I wanted to do when I wrote the book was look at the larger contexts of my illness and of the way that illnesses like mine that are complex multi-system illnesses that primarily affect women are so often dismissed by the medical community. So it's hard for women in particular with these kinds of illnesses to get an accurate diagnosis. And they often, in the meantime, experience dismissive attitudes by their doctors.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I know that listeners right now hearing you say that are just nodding their head like, yes. And so what would you say to listeners, and we'll get into the book, and I want to hear a lot about that, but what would you say to women who might be listening right now, and they don't have mono or they don't have chronic fatigue syndrome, but they have some other multiple co-occurring things going on that are sort of mysterious and nobody can provide a solid answer? What do you want women to take away about that? And it is very complex, and it's... Where would you start with that?
I would start with, you're not crazy. I would add, it's not your fault. And then I would say, if the medical providers that you've seen so far haven't been able to help you identify what the problem is, continue searching. I don't remember the specific statistics for ME/CFS or autoimmune diseases, but it takes on average many years and a lot of money for people to get accurately diagnosed when that is their illness. Another one would be chronic Lyme. And now we have long COVID, which is another complex multi-system illness that was initially dismissed, is now sort of getting more credence in the medical culture. But I'm sure that there are still people going in whose healthcare providers are missing the diagnosis or dismissing the diagnosis. And I am looking forward to the ways that the research that is now being done more of by the CDC and the NIH really will help both long COVID and ME/CFS and all of these complex multi-system illnesses that don't currently fit within our medical framework. Like, to me, they take a new kind of thinking and new ways of researching in order for medicine to catch up with these illnesses that are making so many people so sick.
Yes. And if you're listening to this show and you are in the US and you get your healthcare in the US, that can be more frustrating than some of the other systems. In other parts of the world where accessing healthcare can be a little more straightforward, but I mean, I think it's hard everywhere. So, but I just wanted to say, we do have listeners in other countries. But London, what is a complex multi-system illness? Like, what does that mean?
That's a great question. I mean, I feel like, so when there was an outbreak of what was eventually called chronic fatigue syndrome in 1988 in Lake Tahoe, New York, and another one somewhere near there, I think. And, you know, at the time, the CDC was pretty dismissive as it was just a mental illness of yuppie women who, you know, were maybe didn't want to work as hard as they were. I don't even know, but some of that's in the book. And a lot of that was researched by Hillary Johnson, who wrote Osler's Web, which really goes into the history and the behind the scenes of why these illnesses were inadequately treated from the get-go. But over the long haul of all these decades that these illnesses have been known in our culture, there have been enough researchers to research like all the different parts. And I think there's a growing understanding for ME/CFS, that it's a multi-system, complex and multi-system. And that's now up on the CDC website. So they now call it that. And so what it means is it's not as simple as just identifying one thing and then fixing the one thing. It's like there's a whole cascade effect that happens when our bodies break down, and the reasons that they break down can start from any variety of things, from some sort of chemical assault, like just being exposed to too much pesticide. I knew somebody long ago who he'd had apple orchards and he used pesticide, and then he became ill with multiple chemical sensitivity, or a virus like COVID, or in my case, it was the Epstein-Barr virus. That's what causes mono. It does something to the whole system, and the whole system reacts to that. And therefore, people can have symptoms in all kinds of places, which doctors can look crazy because, like, it doesn't make any sense that you would have brain fog and fatigue and difficulty breathing and pain. I can't even name all the things. But when you begin to look at the body and the brain as a whole system, which is what our culture has failed to do adequately so far, then you fail to be able to recognize and adequately treat these kinds of illnesses.
Yes. And so let's see. I think that I want to ask you about, because you mentioned the CDC and the NIH, and I know from my background in public health and health policy and women's health that, you know, historically, women have been left out of research and clinical trials. And this is becoming more well known, and there are different efforts to include women of different ages, but it's still not sufficient, and it doesn't include all races and all abilities and all, you know, it's not inclusive. So how do you think that has contributed to the complexity of the situation that we have, where so many, and I'm going to say mostly women, are having these issues of these multiple co-occurring illnesses that are so mysterious?
Yeah, well, like one of the things that I wrote about in my book was, we all know this now, that for the longest time, the research that was done about the symptoms of a heart attack were symptoms of men. And apparently the researchers didn't consider that it's possible that women might have different symptoms. And we do. And so that what happens as a result is all of us women have been taught what the symptoms of a heart attack are for men, told that it's what they are, period, go to the hospital having symptoms that feel wrong and getting sent home because even the doctors there say, well, these aren't the symptoms of a heart attack. And that's changing because we now know that women have a very different symptoms when they're having a heart attack sometimes. But how many women have died as a result of the research that wasn't used to determine our specific responses? And autism is another example. So for the longest time, we had a very specific idea of what autism looked like. Well, that idea was based on what it looked like in boys and men. And women have a very different way of expressing autism, and it's been underdiagnosed for decades. And all of a sudden, we're having sort of I would call it a renaissance of women who are being diagnosed with autism, who are finally understanding why they never fit quite in society. And finally, it gives such a sense of relief. And also, the idea of neurodiversity is like so important, right? That we can now, because we have a name for it and we can recognize it, we can actually honor it as a difference instead of something that's wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I got to the whole question. I gave you a couple of examples.
Yeah, no, that's great. Just to, you know, just really making the point that there are these sex and gender differences that show up, you know, differently in different areas, like you've said, in heart disease, in autism, and many other things. So I think part of the issue too is that the research lags behind, or the training of doctors, lags behind the research. So we might find out something in the research, but then to get that into the medical schools and get people trained on those specific things around heart disease, and that's more common now, but autism and the other things, it just, there's a gap there where we're seeing, and this is especially true in menopause and reproductive health, that we're seeing a lot of doctors and health providers not actually get the appropriate training yet. So that's a whole other complex issue that I
and the gap is 17 years, according to research, government research. 17-year gap between when we get the research and when doctors actually begin to know and use it. And wow. So doctors are way behind when it comes to understanding illnesses like ME/CFS and multiple chemical sensitivity, long COVID, chronic Lyme, and all of those things. And the other one I thought of is endometriosis, which I have so many friends who've been diagnosed. And why is it that it's still taking years to diagnose that? It seems at this point like it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And there's a treatment that works and really helps. But instead, those women also are dismissed.
Right. So London, let's talk a bit about your book before we have to take a quick break and then come back with our superpowers segment. But I want to ask you, your book is called American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. It's such an interesting title, and there's so much going on there. What is the breakdown, and what did you want to do by offering this book to the world?
Thank you. The breakdown is both the fact that my body broke down at the age of 21, just a few months after I'd moved to the United States from Canada. So I'm a dual citizen. I was born in the US. I was raised in Canada. And when I moved back to the country where I didn't have any health insurance at the age of 21, thinking I wouldn't need it because I was always healthy, I got really sick. My body broke down. But then there's the larger macro picture of what's happening to our culture now and how is it affecting the health of all of us, not just me, not just women, but all of us. And in fact, America's statistics for health and life expectancy are significantly lower than for other wealthy countries like us. And we spend significantly more money per person to have them be less healthy.
Yeah.
Well, that's that. And then the bigger piece is, I'll say that the last part of the title, The 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life, that was Alice James. And she was a diarist. And she had an illness called neurasthenia. And she was the sister of the writer Henry James and the psychologist William James. And it was a biography of her that I read when I was in 1992 or 94, after I'd been sick for 5 years. Jean Strauss wrote a biography of this sort of minor, not barely known character in the James family, Alice. And Alice was brilliant and so witty. And when I read the book and I read about how debilitated she was and how bedridden she was and how frustrated she was with that and how hard she tried to be well and couldn't, and how she was able to articulate it, and the wit that she had just made me feel like I had a friend and companion through this really lonely time. And I got really curious about whether her illness, neurasthenia, and mine, myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, might be one and the same thing. And I began sort of researching and seeing if I could find much that tied them together. And at the time, there were just a handful of research articles. Now a lot more people are tying them together. It took me 20 years to write the book. But in the process of researching that, I just sort of really delved into the similarities and differences between the 19th century and now, and what the commonalities were and how those might have been affecting health then and now. Mm-hmm. And I really, part of why I wrote the book was because I wanted to explore that. But the other really big part is because these illnesses are so stigmatized, and even neurasthenia in the 19th century had mostly been talked about by wonderful feminist researchers as like a feminist revolt against, you know, being put in tiny boxes in the domestic life. But to me, that was also dismissive of the very real physiological experience of neurasthenia from what I read about Alice. And so I wanted to legitimize these illnesses, and I wanted to bring more attention to them so that patients could get the care they need. And that care isn't just medical care. If your doctor tells you, well, you're not really sick, you're just depressed, as my first doctor did when I was sick here in the US, she also refused to sign a form for me to continue to get welfare without having to work for my general assistance benefits. So she had a lot of power. And, you know, husbands leave wives and wives leave husbands because they just think that they're crazy because that's what the doctors have said. There's so much damage by these illnesses not being recognized. And I really want them to be researched properly so that we can begin finding more effective treatments.
Yeah, well said. And I think one of the most useful things must be connecting with other women and saying, you're not crazy, which is what you said earlier in the beginning of the interview. So I'm speaking with Jennifer London, who goes by London, and we're on the Well Woman Show. I'm Giovanna Rossi. I'll be right back. If you're in burnout or in major transition, this is your time to figure out what's holding you back from making the changes you need in order to live your fullest, most joyful life. The causes of all our challenges, personal or professional, can actually be rooted in the lack of internal superpowers and external supports. Our Well Woman Life Framework tells you which stage of the Well Woman life cycle you're in and what to do about it, so you can truly start living your life. You can find out more at wellwomanlife.com/quiz. And we're back on the Well Woman Show. I'm speaking with Jennifer London, who goes by London. And Jennifer is an author. We've just been talking about her new book, American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. And London, we're going into this segment called Superpowers for Success, which is really helpful for listeners to get a glimpse into you as a leader and as an innovator and a thought leader and an author. And so I have a few quick questions for you as we wrap up the show. The first one is, what does success in life mean for you?
I think that what matters most to me is to make the world a better place. And I guess in a broader way, some of that's in the small, intimate connections of, you know, just being kind and listening to people with empathy and trying to understand both sides. But then in a broader sense, it has to do with creating societal change that for the benefit of the vast majority of us who don't have billions of dollars and who don't have the same kind of power that the moneyed people do.
Yeah. And when did you know you were really good at what you do?
Yeah, to me, it, like when I think about what I do, I mean, what I do is I write. And I've been writing since I was a child. And I'm really fortunate that I had teachers and my parents and peers who were supportive of my writing all along. So it helped build my confidence, and which is really important in a writer, because you have to, there are so many rejections and you just have to keep chugging along. But for this book, I think the thing that was most important is my curiosity. And so like, I didn't just accept like the first answer I came to. I was like, okay, well, what caused that? Well, what caused that? And part of that's from my social work training, is like, we're trained to look at the bigger picture. It's not the person's fault. Like, let's look culturally at what's happening that's creating the conditions for these kinds of illnesses, for instance. And so that curiosity led me to dig deep, and that led me to be able to synthesize from a wide array of disciplines to come up with some ideas that I really do hope will help make the world a better place.
I love that. And I love that you not only identify as a writer, but like you seem to know that is your contribution. And for listeners, you know, sometimes it's hard to know what is your contribution, and does it matter, and how valuable is it, and all of these questions. And so it's really good to go deep and just ask. When you really know internally within yourself that you have to do it, like there's just no other way.
I love how you say that. And one of the things towards the end of the book, I mean, I was very conscious that I didn't want to write a heavy, depressing book about all the things that are wrong with America, which is part of why I interwove my memoir and Alice James's biography. But also, I felt like it was really important to leave on a story on a hopeful note. Like, what are some ways that we can be empowered? What are some ways that social change happens? It's it it surprised me, and it will likely surprise readers, you know, that it's not, social change doesn't happen suddenly. There's a slow underground sort of fomenting that happens when it looks like people are failing over and over again. And then suddenly something happens. That's because of all the groundwork laid over decades by people. And then the other piece that I did was I wanted to get people thinking of, and not feeling powerless, like thinking about what can they offer to, what can they offer to make the world a better place? What kinds of activism can they do? And not all of us are cut out for some things. I really don't like cold calling people on the phone. I really don't like it. I've done it even in the past couple of years. But writing is like the thing that's what I have to give. It's the thing I most have to give. And yeah, each of us has something to give, but it's really important to be able to honor, to recognize what it is and then honor it. Because if we're giving from a place that's not what we're naturally good at, we're going to run out of steam a lot sooner.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Run out of steam is a good way. That's a mild way of putting it, because a lot of women I work with are literally in burnout and breakdown.
Yes.
And so, yeah. So London, can you describe a personal habit that contributes to your well-being so that you can do everything that you do in the world?
It's swimming. And in the summer, I live in Maine, so we don't have a long summer, but I get maybe 3 or 3.5 months where I get to go to this spot in a river, in the Presumpscot River, that's, there aren't a lot of people there, just enough. And I get to see turtles and different kinds of waterfowl and sometimes eagles and interact with nature. And it brings me to a place of awe, and it brings me back to my childhood, which I spent a lot of the time, like, just roaming out in the fields and woods behind my house.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay, and a few other quick questions here. What superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
Right. So that to me is the part about curiosity, but I'll say something else too. And this is something I learned as a writer. So when I was studying my first 2 years of college, I studied in Canada, and I was studying English and creative writing. And at that time, you had two choices for creative writing, your poetry or fiction. And what I learned was I was horrible at writing a linear narrative in fiction. I was also horrible at fiction because I can't make stuff up. I'm just not good at it. So all my fiction was memoir in disguise. And then, you know, I got sick and I wasn't able to do much writing for a long, long, long time. And then when I returned to writing, there was like a whole new, I mean, it's not like it was new, but it was newly recognized and definitely sort of coming to fruition as this genre of creative nonfiction, and particularly the lyric essay, which is hard to define. But like, what I love about the lyric essay is it's not linear. So you can break up things, which is what I ended up doing with the book. So I did write my memoir parts in sort of a linear way in terms of chronology, but I intermingle them with all these other things. It's like interweaving or like putting a puzzle together. And so the thing that was my weakness, I can't write a straight ahead narrative, to me is my actual strength, because I love reading books and essays that are interwoven like that. I just find them exciting and interesting. And I really like to learn. I love to read memoir, but I like to learn something at the same time. And so that's what I was able to do with this book.
Okay. I love that, because what you just described, and I'm going to just reiterate this for listeners, because we talk about this a lot on the Well Woman Show and in the Well Woman community, which is that a lot of times we feel constrained or confined by the status quo, which would have you think that you have to write a narrative that is very linear, right, or whatever. And you've said, well, that's my weakness. And actually, your weakness turns out to be your superpower, in a sense. And so we talk about that a lot in terms of identifying your superpower by first looking at what did people criticize about you?
Oh, I'm so glad you do that. I mean, I think about that in terms of autism too, right?
Yeah.
The autistic people that I know, like, they always felt like they were failing. And now that they see themselves as neurodiverse, they know that their superpower is like bringing something new to the table,
right?
Or being really good at being detail-oriented or whatever it is. It's just a whole different reframing.
Yes, it is a whole different reframing. So I love that you just kind of really pulled that out in your answer just now. So, London, what advice would you give your younger self, say your 25 or 30-year-old self?
So between 25 and 30, I was still very sick. I had just started thinking and researching the book. So I would say, keep going. I wouldn't tell myself how long it will take. I thought it would take 2 years. And hang that in there, and it gets better. I mean, life was pretty rough for me for over a decade, really rough. And I am so grateful for the life that I have now, that I get to be a writer. You know, I'm happily married. We have wonderful pets and chickens right through my window that I can look at. And I just am so grateful for the life that I have now.
Okay. And do you identify as a feminist?
Yes. Yes. And the book has a very strong feminist lens. It uses feminism as one of the lenses.
Nice. Nice. Okay, great. Last question, London. What are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
I am reading a book called Nervous, Essays on Heritage and Healing by Jen Soriano. And what I love about this book, it's very much in the vein of what I'm doing with American Breakdown, but I feel like it sort of takes it to the next level because she in specific looks at I do talk about trauma as a stressor in my book and how stress can have impacts on our immune system. And that trauma can be childhood trauma or more adulthood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But she looks at trauma in terms of the legacies of war, racism, colonization, and again, she does that interweaving where she's interweaving her own memoir with looking at this bigger picture. And it's beautifully written.
Oh, okay. We'll have to add that to our reading list for listeners. That will be at the show notes for this episode. And London, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful talking with you.
That's it for our show today. Remember, if you need support to live your Well Woman life, head over to wellwomanlife.com. As a reminder, we are on NPR every week, so be sure to tune in at npr.org/podcasts and search for The Well Woman Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please take a moment and subscribe and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you are listening, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.